This is WSBT's Community Update on 96.1 WSBT.
Good morning. I'm John Hoffman. We've been taking you through what empowerment zones can look like for teachers and administrators over the past couple of weeks. But what does that look like for parents? WSBT 22's Tali Taylor talked to parents in Springfield, Massachusetts about the past 4 years of the zone there. That's the model South Bend is using here. Improved communication and new positions have helped turn things around in Springfield.
An app called Dojo now connects Duggan Academy administrators and parents. So if one side needs something, the answer is just a quick message away. And then in terms of student development, the principal created a new position that focuses on helping the social emotional growth of students, allowing teachers to focus on academics.
Just embrace the change, you know, be open-minded and, you know, just be willing to adapt.
That's Sharonda Wilson's advice for parents who have kids in the South Bend Empowerment Zone. She has an 8th and 9th grader at Duggan Academy in Springfield's Empowerment Zone, and she's seen the way the school has changed since her oldest first started attending Duggan. But she tells me she also saw parents who resisted the change.
Because if you resist it, then your kids can feel it and they see it and they'll resist it too, and then it's hard for the teachers to work with them and get them on a plan that they need.
Wilson says she likes the longer school days, access to more tutors, and the enrichment programs the school now offers. But another parent remembers what it was like before the Empowerment Zone took over.
At one point, they were allowed to leave early on a Wednesday or something like that. And it's like, how are they learning if you're letting them out early?
Tove Henry has 5 children between 22 and 12, and all of them have attended Duggan. Right now, she says, it's the best she's seen it. After years of a revolving door of principals and teachers, Principal Mike Calvinese is actually, quote, about the students. Now, the school is a consistent positive in her kids' lives. Other parents tell me the same thing.
He feels like he matters.
Jessie Kale went to Duggan herself, and she noticed the difference in her 8th grade son right away. She says Duggan's teachers truly want to know the kids one-on-one, and they go to parents for information. And then there's the way they value what her son wants.
The main difference I saw is he's not just a number on a paper. He is an individual person, and his character matters. Like, his character growth matters here. His goals matter.
I saw a hand up over here.
Timmy Hurley is Duggan's Dean of Culture, a position created specifically for the school. He says it's hard for teachers and staff to take on academic changes and social-emotional changes that are necessary to turn around schools like Duggan. That's where he comes in, working on the culture of the school with a clear motto: respect, responsibility, quality, and perseverance. And it's a motto that's resulted in more communication with parents.
Even the smallest bit of concern, you're getting a phone call, you're getting an email, you're getting a message. It's been flawless with the communication.
All the Duggan parents I spoke to say the communication with the school is much better than it was before the Empowerment Zone. The principal hosts a coffee hour once a month where parents can come and ask questions and share concerns.
One mom says a few years ago her daughter had an issue when she was at another school in the district and asked about it. The school told her they had a plan but couldn't tell her what it was. Contrast that with a few weeks ago when she sent an email expressing concern and got a call from the dean 3 minutes later. 3 months into the operation of the South Bend Empowerment Zone, how do parents feel about it so far? WSBT 22 Operation Education Investigator Tali Taylor talked with parents at the start of the school year and went back this past week to see how it's going.
You may remember I first spoke to Rita Scales and her two boys on Navarre's first day of school. With a few months of school under their belts, her reaction is, so far so good.
6th grader Nashawn is pretty new to Navarre Middle School, but he already has a few favorite classes.
Math, science, gym.
His brother Jeremiah is the one you have to ask about changes during the first few months of the South Bend Empowerment Zone. The 8th grader had 2 years at the school before the zone took over, and he's liking what he sees.
I like these new teachers. I love the principal now.
The boys just finished up a busy football season, playing on the same team for the first time. Their mother, Rita, is an alumna of the school, and she's noticed subtle changes in her boys.
I haven't seen any, like, real big changes, but I do appreciate the small changes that I'm seeing. So starting with the education, that is a pretty big change with seeing that the kids are taking this more seriously.
Rita says Jeremiah has been active in community service, and he's always been a good student. But she noticed big changes in Nashawn when he switched from elementary school to middle school. Suddenly, he's getting up on his own, eating breakfast, getting his backpack ready, and eager to walk out the door. She can't help but smile when she talks about it.
I do my best to make sure my kids know that education is important, and they're really making me proud, you know, with their grades and how they take an interest into sports and just loving school and being on their best behavior. I'm really a proud mom. I love it.
If there's anything that's clear from my trip to the Springfield Empowerment Zone, it's that change comes slowly, even in successful zone schools. But Rita tells me she's encouraged by what she sees at Navarre. She does say she wishes she heard more communication from the zone board, but understands it's a work in progress. Part of that progress is recently adding 3 new board members.
Especially for our youth, it's important to be in the room where changes are occurring and decisions are being made to voice our opinions and our concerns and to make sure that we are being included.
Zone board member Ashley Northern is a caregiver for her niece, who's a 4th grader at Warren Elementary, one of the other zone schools. When she heard about the Empowerment Zone, she knew she wanted to get involved. She says it's important to be informed about what's going on in the community. And like Rita, she's seen encouraging changes in her niece over the last year.
She struggled tremendously last year. We had many problems, and this year she has been on the up and up.
Northern tells me that she hopes to add a different perspective to the zone board. She says the board already has school representatives and business leaders, and with her addition, they'll now have the perspective of a single parent in the community. The zone is going to be offering family photos at every school, so families can come in, have their picture taken for free, and then they'll take a survey where they can give their thoughts on what's happening so far and then suggestions for the future.
That's WSBT 22 Operation Education Investigator Tolly Taylor reporting. The coming session of the Indiana Legislature will be the last for House Speaker Brian Bosma, who announced last week he will retire after the 2020 session. The Indianapolis Republican is the longest-serving speaker in state history, having first acquired the job in 2004 and regained it in 2010. He has served in the legislature continuously since 1987, and in recent years has led a Republican supermajority large enough to prevent Democrats from blocking anything United Republicans want to do. Bosma is expected to maintain his day job at an Indianapolis law firm after he retires from lawmaking. Indiana is one step closer to raising the age to purchase tobacco products to 21. House Speaker Brian Bosma says he now supports the idea. Some lawmakers have been pushing for this age increase for a number of years now.
For a long time, Republicans, including Bosma, blocked those efforts. Now that they've changed their stance, smoking cessation experts are hopeful for that law change. They say it would protect Indiana's youth. Chantel Jamie has been smoking about 15 years, nearly half of her life.
It releases endorphins in your brain, so like if you're having a rough day and you need something to bump that happy juice in your head, it kind of helps.
That's part of the reason Jamie does not support a proposal to raise the purchasing age of tobacco.
If you can ask someone to be an adult and make adult decisions to vote, fight for your country, why shouldn't they be allowed to smoke?
Sandy Pontius, a tobacco education coordinator for Smoke-Free St. Joe, says that's flawed logic.
The majority of those things, you know, voting, etc., are dangerous for your health.
Obviously, serving in the military comes with risks. But at a news conference last week, House Speaker Brian Bosma says military leaders are asking for this law change.
They don't allow the recruits to smoke in boot camp. They are all on board to raising the age for 21. That changed my attitude in that regard.
Pontius says raising the purchase age makes it harder for young people to become addicted to tobacco products.
A lot of times 18-year-olds are still in high school, so they can purchase, you know, legally, but bring it back to school and distribute it or sell it.
Jamie says the change may make things harder, but kids will always find a way.
Like when I was 14, when I'd take them from my friend who was able to smoke, I still was able to get them.
Pontius told me 50% of Medicaid recipients smoke cigarettes, which means taxpayers pick up the tab for their health care. She says every household in the country pays around $900 per year to support those smokers. And if we can reduce youth smoking rates, she says that number would likely drop.
WSBT 22's Caitlin Conan reporting. Bankruptcy records filed recently show the wealth and possessions of the founder of the Elkhart-based Interlogic Outsourcing, Incorporated. The South Bend Tribune reports Najib Khan's assets include 281 vehicles valued at some $31 million, homes valued at $6.8 million and $59 million in assets spread among various companies he owns. Khan is no longer in control of IOI. It's a payroll processing firm with thousands of clients nationwide, and he faces fraud charges running into millions of dollars. Former clients and others claim Khan owes them millions, and his bankruptcy filing means at least some of the assets will likely be sold. A trustee overseeing the assets in the bankruptcy case says an auction house is planning to sell the vehicles and perhaps other assets as well. The documents also list real estate holdings, including two homes on Eagle Lake in Edwardsburg, a $2.8 million home in Scottsdale, Arizona, and two condominiums in Florida, each valued at nearly $1 million. In all, Khan's combined assets total around $98 million, but his liabilities exceed $125 million, according to court records. Khan and IOI in July were accused by KeyBank of a check-kiting scheme that cost the bank $122 million. That lawsuit led to Khan's resignation as scores of IOI clients realized money withdrawn from their accounts for federal tax withholdings was never sent to the Internal Revenue Service. Khan resigned from IOI soon after, and the company declared bankruptcy last month. IOI was sold to Pennsylvania-based payroll firm PrimePay for $3.5 million. Khan has not been charged with a crime and, according to court filings, is cooperating with a federal investigation. Those who lost money as a result of the alleged fraud from KeyBank to IOI's clients are still seeking repayment. Former IOI clients that have claims include the Catholic dioceses in Charlotte, Raleigh, Palm Beach, and New Orleans. Other former clients demanding repayment in the case are a home builder called Commodore Corporation and more than a dozen former IOI clients represented by a South Bend law firm. Beaches are disappearing and properties are at risk. We've seen the effects of erosion along the Lake Michigan shoreline in southwest Michigan.
They say the erosion of the coastline just isn't getting the attention it deserves. Berrien County is already asking Michigan's governor to declare it a disaster area, but now they're taking their case to the president. But some are worried it could be too little, too late.
Eric Pete has lived along the shores of Lake Michigan for the past 5 years. One of the perks is his deck overlooking the water and beautiful sunsets, but that could soon be a thing of the past.
We're just one storm away from losing here what we're standing on.
He and his neighbors on the lake have seen the size of their properties dwindle over the past few months. Several storms and large waves have chipped away at the lakeshore bit by bit.
When the storms come in and with the height of the current water, it's remarkable how much sand can be washed out and how much of the bluffs are toppling.
Where beachfront was and where trees used to grow now sits large pieces of rock to act as barriers, working to keep the water at bay.
I believe it's the most dire it's going to get. For right now, I don't see the lake going down, and I see the problem getting worse the longer we wait.
Tonight, Eric and his wife, Connie, hosted a meeting of people experiencing the exact same thing. They, along with Berrien County Commissioner Ezra Scott, are working to drum up support as the situation gets worse by the day. The county has asked Governor Whitmer to declare more than 3,000 miles of the lakeshore a disaster area with the hope of getting the federal government involved.
She's telling the President of the United States, the local, the county, and the state do not have the money nor the resources to address this dire problem that we're in right now.
Scott has meetings scheduled with both state senators, Representative Fred Upton, and the White House to lobby for the cause. For the Peets, they're left waiting for action from Lansing and Washington, enjoying what's left of what Mother Nature has given them before she takes it away.
So what could be done to stop the erosion? Well, Commissioner Scott says he would like to see some sand pumped onto the shorelines, which is similar to what's done after hurricanes. The major thing they're watching now is a storm set to hit on Wednesday that could bring 60-mile-an-hour winds that could make the problem worse than it already is.
WSBT 22's Max Lewis reporting earlier this week.
The views expressed on WSBT's Community Update are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, WSBT Radio, its staff, or management. Join us again next week on Community Update on the Sports Leader, 96.1 WSBT.